Now we're holding on Ayin Amud Beis, about the middle of the wide lines. The line begins with Kom Atma. We learned yesterday the whole story of how Rav Yehuda had announced that a particular person from Nahadah is actually a descendant of slaves. This guy claimed that he's from the family of the Hashmonaim, and really it turned out that he's descended from Hordos and has the status in Halacha of an Eved, and that there were apparently a bunch of other families that were implicated in that also. So now continues the Gemara on that theme of families that were thought to be kosher, and then the Chachamim announced that they're not. So Machli is Rav Yehuda b'Pumbedisa. Rav Yehuda made the following announcement in Pumbedisa, where he was the Rosh Hashiva. On the side over here, it says maybe it should be Ben Haudah, and then that's how it brings in Shiltus. So according to that, while Rav Yehuda was there in Haudah doing the whole previous story, then he also made the following announcements. This may be in continuation of the previous story, then, once it was found that this guy, and therefore anybody related to him, is from the family of Hordos, so then Rav Yehuda took the time to announce that. So anyway, Oda v'Yonis and Avdi, people named Oda and Yonison are actually slaves. People thought that they were legitimate Jews, but it turns out that not. Another one he announced is Yehuda bar Papa Mamzera. Somebody called Yehuda bar Papa is actually a Mamzer. And another one, Bati bar Tuvia, Biromis Rucho Leshoku Gitta de Cherusa. There's a guy named Bati bar Tuvia who, because he's too proud, he didn't get a Get Cherus, meaning he's an Eved. His master would have been willing to free him, and then he'd become a regular Ben Yisrael. But this Bati was too proud to accept a Get Shichur, so therefore he remains an Eved. Therefore he remains an Eved in Halacha. At the end of Avodah Zarah, the last piece of Masecht Avodah Zarah mentions this Bati Bar Tuvia in a different context, where apparently he was a very prominent person. He and Rav Yehuda were one time at an audience in front of Shabu Malka. And then there's a whole story over there about how the honor that Shabu showed to Rav Yehuda as compared to Bati. We see from that story that Bati was not as careful in mitzvahs as Rav Yehuda, although we also see there, Tosfos points out over there that the particular Aveira that he was, well, at least according to one opinion, the particular Aveira that he was accused of is something where, as an Eved, maybe it's not so bad. It had to do with him being with a certain woman. Anyway, So these are all things Rav Yehuda announced. Similarly, Machlis Rava b'Mechuza, similarly Rava in Mechuza, where he was the Rosh Hashiva, announced Baloi, Danoi, Taloi, Maloi, Zagoi, all these various families. Rashi says either their names of places, or so all the people from these places, or it means names of certain families. Kulam Lifso, all of them are apostle, all of them are apostle Lovei Bakahol, or Mamzerim, or Nesinim, or various other groups like that. Evidently, you know, even though we learned the other day that, we learned yesterday that Ezra cleaned up all of Eretz Yisrael, all of Babel before he left, from Ezra's time until Rav Yehuda, and then Rava's hundreds of years, so evidently during that time, you had time for Psulim to get mixed in, and therefore Rav Yehuda and then Rava have to clarify things. Omer of Yehuda, Goivai Givoinoi. Rav Yehuda says, here's another one. The people of the city Goivai in Babel are really Givoinim. That's why the place is called Goivai, because they're descendants of Givoinim. Similarly, Dur Nunissa, there's a place over there called Dur Nunissa, which stands for Dura Duroi Nisinoi. It stands for the village of Nisinim. Now, the Nisinim and the Givoinim are basically the same thing. The Nisinim are descended from the Givoinim, but they have two different places, one named after their original ethnic origin as Givoinim, and the other one named for their status among the Jews as Nisinim. I did once see an explanation, actually, I don't remember where, that Givoinim are the name that not all of them maybe became Jews when within the whole thing with Yeshua. Maybe some of them only accepted Shev Metzis Bnei Noyam. So the ones who did that were called Givoinim, the ones who actually accepted Yiddishkeit in full and became Geirat Tzedek were called Nesinim. So then over here, the two villages would be like that. Another one, Omer of Yosef, Hai Bei Kuvi de Pumbedisa, the people of the city Bei Kuvi, which is near Pumbedisa, Kulam Avodim, all of them are, Kulam de Avi, all of them are descendants from slaves. And another one, Omer of Yehuda Amishmol, Arba Meis Avodim, Va'amila Arba As Alofim Avodim, 4,000 slaves, and some 400 slaves, or some say 4,000, Hoyla Lepashchur Ben Imer. Pashchur ben Immer had this many slaves, 400 or 4,000. Pashchur ben Immer was a prominent Kohen an official in the Beis Mikdash towards the end of the first Beis Mikdash. We find him in Sefer Yirmiyah at one point when Yirmiyah had said a harsh nevuah of Churban and Galus. Then this pashur, the pasuk says, beat up Yirmiyah and threw him in jail, telling him you can't say such a nevuah. And then afterwards, when he released Yirmiyah from jail, then Yirmiyah tells him personally a harsh nevuah that he says you and your whole family are going to wind up in Bavel and you're going to die there in Galus. So now we're saying that he had 400 or 4,000 servants, v'cholam nitma'u b'kohuna, all of them were mixed into the kohuna by marrying daughters of Kohanim, meaning what happened was they were eating truma, and because after all they were avodim of Kohanim, and as we talked about the other day, sometimes you can have a person eats truma and people can think therefore that he's a Kohen. Usually you're supposed to keep track of these things, but obviously in this case we're saying that that broke down. So now, as a result of them eating truma, people mistakenly thought that they were Kohanim and allowed them to intermarry into families of Kohanim. So the result is you have people who think that they're Kohanim and are really descended from those Avadim. And Rav Yehuda continues, V'chol Kohen sheyesh bei azus panim, whenever you have a Kohen who's a chutzpanyak, then you should know he's really descended from them. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that la halacha, we say that he's not considered a Kohen, but at least we should be choshesh, in other words, that he's actually descended from them, rather than being a legitimate Kohen. Amar Abaye, kulu yasvan b'shura d'bina hadar. All of them live in Shura of Nahardah. Shura literally means the wall, so it can mean they live in the area around the wall of Nahardah, as opposed to, in other words, the ones who live further in the city are the real legitimate Kohenim. There are different other Gersois over here. Agos Abach has a Gersa B'shuka de Nahardah, the Yad Ramah has a Gersa B'shuka de Nahardah, they live in the marketplace of Nahardah. However, the Gemara says, Upliga de Rabbi Lazar. Now, this that Shmuel is saying, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying in his name, that any Kohen that you find who's an Azponim is of necessity descended from these not real Kohenim, from these Avodim of Pashkub and Immer, who got mixed into the Kohen by mistake. Rabbi Lazar disagrees with that. The Amr Rabbi Lazar, if you see a Kohen who's a chutzpanyak, al tahar her acharav, on the contrary, don't start second guessing him and thinking that his family may be posel. On the contrary, the very fact that he has that azus on him is a testament to his being a legitimate Kohen. As the pasuk says, your people, Navi is talking about the Jewish people collectively, are like the quarreling Kohenim. So we see that the Kohenim are prone to starting arguments and being quarreling and being as upon him. Because they figure, Marsha says, they're miuchasim, so therefore they figure that they shouldn't have to give in so easily. According to Shmuel, then, if you see a chutzpah Kohen, it shows that he's not really a legitimate Kohen, and according to Rabbi Lazar, on the contrary, that shows that he is. Okay. Going back to, yesterday we learned on Omer Aleph about various statements of Amiroyim about when a person marries a woman who's unsuitable for him, where we said unsuitable could mean that she's an actual psula, like a mamzeres or what have you. It can mean that there's a suffix soul in her, so you're not sure whether she's a mamzeres or what have you. Or you could have, where maybe it even means just unsuitable in the sense, for example, she's the daughter of an amoret and you're a talmud chacham and you shouldn't be marrying such a woman. So now continues the Gemara on that theme. When a man marries a woman who's not suitable for him, who's posel or whatever the definitions we said before, then, when Hashem makes his Shechina rest on the Jewish people, when Mashiach comes in particular, Hashem will testify about each of the Shvatim that they're legitimate and uncorrupted, but Hashem will not testify about him, because he married somebody he wasn't supposed to. As you said, it says in the pasuk, Shivtei ka edus leYisrael, the Shvatim of Hashem, of Yudkei, a testimony for the Jewish people. So, Amos, they have it, Adris Israel. When do you have that Hashem can testify about the Jewish people, that they're his nation, Bizman Shvatim Shifte Yudke, when the Shvatim are the way they're supposed to be, the Shvatim of Hashem, rather than being mixed in with Goyim or Nesinim or Mamzerim or what have you. In particular, Yud K, we find you have the famous Gemara that says a man has the name, has the letter Yud of Hashem's name in him, Ish. The woman has the Hey, Isha, Ish v'Isha Zochu Shechina b'neihem. When there's Zoicha, then they have Hashem's name between them, the letters Yud and Hey. So here, a person marries improperly, so he doesn't have that Yud and Hey with himself and his wife, and therefore it's not Edrusli Yisrael. Continues the Gemara. For that reason also, we find the Rashi and Parshas Pinchas from the Medrash that when Moshe was taking the last census before he passed away, that each of the names of the families of the Shvatim has a Yud and a Hey appended to them. You have, for example, Haruveni, Hashimoni, Hachanoichi, Hapalui, etc., because Hashem was testifying with that they had all stayed faithful to each other during the years in Mitzrayim, and none of them had gotten mixed in with the Goyim. So therefore, in a similar vein over there, you have the Yud and the Hey being Hashem's testimony. Here we're saying Hashem can't do that, because the person, in fact, married somebody he wasn't supposed to. Further, the Gemara says, Amar Abchama Brav Hanina, Shakarish Baruch Hu Mashu Shchinosai, when Hashem makes his Shchina rest on the Jewish people, Ein Mashu Ela Mishpachas Miuchosis Shabi Yisrael. Hashem will have his Shchina rest only on the families of Jews that have Yichus. Now, again, throughout this parak over here, we don't mean Yichus as in they're descended from a famous Rav or something like that. We mean Yuchsin, in other words, as in they've been careful not to get Mamzerim or Goyim or Nesinim or Avodim or whatever mixed in among them. So only the ones that don't have any psul among them. Shenemar, as the pasuk is, but Esahinu Um Hashem Elya Lelikim L'Chol Mishpachos Yisrael. Hashem says at that time when Mashiach comes, I will be a God for all the families of Yisrael. So now L'Chol Yisrael Lenemar doesn't say to all Jews, which would mean whatever their marital, whatever their family status. Elya L'Chol Mishpachos. It says to all the families, because Hashem needs the family to be intact and to be completely from Yisrael and not mixed in with anybody else, in order for Hashem to be their God, meaning for Hashem to have a special relationship and have a Shechina rest on them. Now, that same pasuk continues, Vehema Yiyu Lila'am, the pasuk continues, they will be for me a people. Amar Rav Bar Avuna, Zu Maile Yisera Yesh Ben Yisrael Lagerim. This pasuk, these words, Vehema Yiyu Lila'am, refer to a greater advantage that born Jews have over Gerim. Because by the Jews, the born Jews, the pasuk says, I will be their God and they will be my nation, meaning, in other words, it's a rusa de la'ela. First Hashem rests his Shechina on them, and then they'll clean up their act and they'll become what worthy of being called Hashem's people. But Hashem makes the first move. The Ilab Gerim Ksiv, whereas when it comes to Gerim, you have a few psukim earlier, it says, Mi huze oreves liboy, logeshes elai nu'um Hashem. Hashem says, who is it that has decided in his heart to come close to me? Says Hashem, referring to Gerim, who voluntarily come and join the Jewish people. And then the pasuk continues, Ve'yisem lila'am, you will be my nation, va'anoichi eya lachem le'lekim, and I will be your God. Meaning in those psukim, we're talking about that the people have to make the first move. So who is that who has to make the first move? Mi'uze orav aslibay, the one who has to voluntarily on his own decide to join, namely the Gerim. So in other words, the advantage is the Jews, the born Jews, Hashem will bring them close on his own, and then that'll stimulate them, that'll motivate them to do the right thing and do tshuva and become worthy of becoming Hashem's people. Whereas when it comes to Gerim, it's the other way around. They have to make the first move, and only then does Hashem reciprocate.
It seems that based on that, the Gerim have more schus because they decide they want to become part of the Jewish people.
I suppose in a way that's true, but we're saying on the other hand, the fact is, if a person doesn't decide that, then he remains lost. Hashem doesn't make the first move and motivate him to do it. Whereas with a Jew, lo yudach mimenu nidach, ultimately Hashem is going to find and gather in every single yid, no matter how far he is. So in that sense, the born Jews have an advantage that they're guaranteed for none of them to get lost. Mm-hmm. So that seems to be what the Gemara means. So the Gemara continues in this vein. Amar Rav Chelba, Koshim Gerim the Yisrael Kesapachas. Gerim are as hard for the Jewish people as a sapachas, which is a type of tsaras. Shenema, we find another pasuk regarding Gerim. V'nilva ger aleihem. The pasuk says Gerim will join the Jewish people. V'nisbechu al beis Yaakov. Now, literally, the word v'nisbechu means they'll be appended or annexed to the Jewish people. But why this word v'nisbechu? K'sivach v'nisbechu. Ochtivasam las eis v'lasapachas. When we have the list of the various kinds of tsaras, one kind is called sapachas because it's also like a secondary, like an appended type of tsaras. It's a slightly duller color. The point is, therefore, so there's a certain similarity. So therefore, the pasuk is hinting that there's a certain connection between gerim and tsaras. Now, why is that? Why should we put down gerim like that? So there's many, many different explanations. Rashi over here says, gerim are not always careful with mitzvahs. So therefore, what happens is people have born Jews are around gerim, and therefore they learn from them. They learn from them maybe to act in ways that are not so good, because these gerim themselves are still acting in ways that they still took over from their previous goyish life, and therefore Jews learn from them. Now, there's many, many other explanations. Rashi elsewhere, this Gemara is also a Nidda, Rashi brings over there related to that, not just that Jews learn from them, but also they cause, since they're not doing the right thing, and therefore they bring punishment down on the Jewish people, and therefore the born Jews are caught up in that as well. Rashi there makes another point also that because Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazet, so therefore that if a ger does something wrong, then the born Jews are held to account for it. Tosfos over here actually deals with that and says not necessarily. It seems that the concept of Arevos really only applies among born Jews based on a Gemara in Sota. Tosfos over here brings several other explanations. Tosfos over here brings four different explanations. One is because the Torah warns us over and over again to be careful with the feelings of a ger, and it's very hard sometimes. Sometimes by mistake you hurt somebody's feelings, and with a ger the consequences are much more serious. So therefore, it's hard on the Jewish people. Second thing, Tosfos says we have the famous Gemara in Psachim that says why did Hashem send the Jewish people in Golos in order that gerim should be added to us? So therefore, in that sense, gerim caused that we remain in Golos because there are still gerim out there to be gotten. So in that sense also. Another point Tosfos brings from Rav Avraham Ager. So this Rav Avraham himself was a ger. That itself, there must have been quite a story over there, considering that at that point in history, it was very, in that time and place, it was very dangerous to become a ger. Anyway, this Rav Avraham Ager says something almost the opposite of what Rashi says over here. Rashi says that gerim are careless with details of mitzvahs and Jews learn from them. This Rav Avraham Ager says, on the contrary, gerim are ultra careful with details of mitzvahs. Therefore, it makes the regular Jews look bad. Why aren't you as careful and as diligent with details of mitzvahs? And the last answer Tosfos gives is, we just said, that the Shechina rests only on the families of Jews who have Yichus. A ger in that sense doesn't have that kind of Yichus. So when there are gerim around, then it means that there's less of Ashras Shechina on the Jewish people. And Tosfos likes that explanation because then it fits in the context of the Gemara we're saying over here. There are other points as well. The Rambam mentions a point that many gerim convert for insincere reasons, and therefore then similar to what Rashi says over here, then therefore they're not always careful with mitzvahs, and Jews learn from them and end up being caught up with them. For example, look what happened with Shloima's wives. Obviously there are always exceptions. Ruth, for example, is presumably not in this category. Other real Gerik Tzedek, Avraham and others, but on the whole, we're saying you have these various considerations. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Chama bar Chanina, Shakadosh Baruch Hu Metahar Shvatim, when Hashem is going to purify the Shvatim, La'asid Lavi, when Hashem is going to tell us who belongs to what Shevet, and who are the Miyuchasim from that Shevet, Shivtei Shal Levi Metahar Tchila, the first one that Hashem is going to be Metahar is Shevet Levi. Shenema, as the pasuk says, the Yoshev Mitzaref Mutahar Kesef, the refiner and the purifier of silver, which refers to in the previous pasuk, it mentions a malach that Hashem is going to send for this purpose. Elsewhere it talks about that it's Eliyahu HaNavi. The Kiharis B'nei Levi, he's going to clean up B'nei Levi. He's going to tell us who are the Ksherim and who are the Psulim. The Zikak Oysam Kazahav B'chakosef. He will refine them like silver and like gold. And they will be the ones who offer a mincha to Hashem in purity, meaning, in other words, so first he's going to clean up and figure out who are the, and then tell us who are the legitimate kohenim, who are the legitimate levim, and then they're going to be the ones who are serving in the Bais Hamikdash. Marsha points out what's the, in other words, the Jewish people in general, when we're not on such a high level, then we're compared to, so we're compared to tzaddikim. And if they're even on a lower level, then they're compared to dross, to base metal that's mixed in with the silver. So here also we're saying that Hashem is going to clean us up like silver and even on a higher level like gold. And then he goes on to say the end of the pasuk, "V'hoyu Hashem magishen mincha b'tzedaka," is now you're going to have like this in Sefer Ezra. You have the story where there were Jews who had intermarried with goyim, and eventually Ezra got them to separate from these goyish wives. And the pasuk says over there they each had to bring a korban for it. So now la'asid lavay, also when you have people who are married to psulim and have to separate from them, they're also going to have to bring a korban. But because you have the Gemara in Sanhedrin that says ein ben David ba al ad sheyichlo prutim in a case, that Mashiach is going to come when Jews are at an extreme low of poverty, so therefore people aren't going to be able to afford any korban more than a korban mincha. That is why the pasuk says over here magishe mincha b'tzedaka, to hint at that. Continues the Gemara. Another way of understanding that pasuk, the Yoshev Mitzaref Mitaher Kesef, Amar Rabbi Shurban Levi, Kesef Mitaher Mamzelim. Silver, meaning money, cleans up Mamzelim. What does that mean? So Rashi explains, you have like this. So you have people, you have Mamzelim who have money, and they end up intermarrying into Jewish families, into legitimate Jewish families. Now all this time we're saying that's a terrible thing, and it causes those families to be blemished forevermore, but that itself is going to cause, it's not going to be forevermore when Mashiach comes, once those families are already blended in with other legitimate families and nobody knows that there's a problem with their yichus, then Hashem is going to leave them alone. So therefore, in that sense, their money that during our times, they ended up intermarrying into Jewish families without those families realizing or paying attention, that itself is going to cause that those families will be tohar lo'asid lavoy, because Hashem is not going to separate them out. Hashem is not going to announce that they're mamzerim. There are various other explanations as well. Rashi on the Rif brings an explanation. We learned a few days ago, we said that a mamzer has a way of making his descendants tohar by marrying a shivcha knanis, and then the children are avodim, and then he frees them. So in that sense, when he has money, he's able to buy a shivcha knanis, and then he's able to use this whole method. Tosfos Chachmei Anglia says another thing. Kesef over here doesn't mean money, it means embarrassment. So we find that shodesh being used for that. Pisufa in Aramaic. So it means when a person is called a mamzer and he's embarrassed of it, that itself shows that he's legitimate. So that's another meaning of the yosh of mitaher kesef. Shenema v'yosh mitzaref mitaher kesef, as the pasuk says that Hashem will sit there and then refine and purify the silver. So in other words, you have people who are considered purified because of their silver or because of their embarrassment. Now, what about, the pasuk continues, my magishe mincha b'tzedaka. What are those last words in the pasuk that they offer a mincha in tzedaka? So Marusha says what the offering of mincha means. It means people are going to have to bring a korban, but they're poor and they can't afford any better korban, so therefore they bring the mincha. But what is b'tzedaka? Means Amar Yitzchak Tzedaka also Hakadosh Baruch Hu Im Yisrael, means Hashem did a kindness, a tzedaka, to the Jewish people. Shemishpacha shenitma on nitma. Once a family has been blended in and nobody knows that they're descended from mamzerim or whatever, then it's considered mixed in, and Hashem is not going to separate them out, and Hashem is not going to announce that they are in fact fossil. There is a good deal of discussion among Rishonim whether that din applies nowadays also. If you have a family that now, you know, they had a mamzer in them 4 or 5 or whatever generations back, and nobody knows about it anymore, are you entitled to say, well, mishpacha shenitma nitma, and therefore we don't have to worry about it? Or do we say, if we ever find out that information, then we do have to publicize it, and this mishpacha shenitma nitma refers only lost and lover. There's a good deal of discussion about that, and also, does it depend? There's a machloikas in a braisa later on in our perek that discusses whether mamzerim and nesinim are tahorim lost and lover. So does that factor into this also? Okay. Anyway, you have a machloikas on that subject. Good. So now getting back to, we learned on Samach Tes on the Beis, Omer of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kol Arotis Isa Le'Eretz Yisrael, Ve'Eretz Yisrael Isa Le'Bavel. We said that all other lands are considered like an Isa as far as matters of Yuchsin relative to Eretz Yisrael. So over there, Rashi had explained that Isa means a dough, meaning a dough has many different ingredients in it mixed all together, the same way people in other countries are all mixed. You don't know who are the legitimate ones, who are the Miuchosim, who are the not, because they don't have the Bote Dinim over there, don't keep track of those things, as compared to Eretz Yisrael, where they do. The Eretz Yisrael, Yisrael of Bavel, and Eretz Yisrael in turn is like a mixture compared to Bavel, because we said before that Ezra cleaned up Bavel and removed all the psalm from it. Here, Rashi says a different explanation of Issa. He brings from a Reb Moshe from Rome that it means that Issa over here means the leftovers of grapes after you squeeze out the wine. So relative to Eretz Yisrael, the Jews of all other countries, as far as Yuchsin, are like the dregs like that, and Eretz Yisrael in turn is the dregs compared to Bavel. So the Gemara tells, Bimei Rebbe Bichrolasis Bavel Isa L'Eretz Yisrael. In Rebbe's times, the Chachamim wanted to declare the other way around, that Bavel was considered an Isa relative to Eretz Yisrael. They figured hundreds of years have passed since Ezra's times. There's been enough time for Psalim to get mixed back in Bavel. And after all, the whole point was that Ezra figured there aren't going to be such great Chachamim in Bavel in the future, so they may not keep track of things. So now, by Rebbe's times, they figured that must be the case, and therefore that Eretz Yisrael should be considered to have the higher level yichus. And the nafkamina of it would be, in other words, that if a Kohen wants to marry a woman from Eretz Yisrael, then he doesn't have to check into her lineage to make sure that there's no psulim in her family, whereas if he marries from Bavel, he would. So they wanted to do that. But Rebbe says to them, Kotzim atam simli bein einai, you're putting thorns between my eyes, because Rebbe's family themselves came from Bavel. Rebbe was descended from Hillel, who came from Bavel several generations earlier. If you're going to tell me the people of Bavel are psula yichus, then it's like you're directly attacking me. Ritzonchem, if you want, yitapolim machem Reb Chanina b'chom. Reb Chanina b'chom will join in with you and explain to you why you shouldn't do that. So sure enough, Nitfal Imam Reb Chanina b'chom, but Omer Lahem, and he tells them, Kach mekublanim Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi sh'amim mishum olim. This is how I have the Kabbalah from Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi, who said in the name of his father, and these are Chachamim from Eretz Yisrael. So unlike Rebbe, who's from Bavel, you can't argue that they're doing it out of bias towards Bavel. And they said, Kol Arosis Itzel Eretz Yisrael, the Eretz Yisrael Itzel the Bavel. Now that's how it is. Eretz Yisrael, relative to Bavel, is considered an Issa. So leave things the way they are now. The people of Bavel have a chazaka of being Yuchasim. The people of Eretz Yisrael have less of a chazaka of that. So they left it. They left the issue alone. Similarly, Bimei Reb Pinchas Bichrolasis Bavel Isal Eretz Yisrael. In Reb Pinchas's times, one of the later Amiroyim, apparently, they also were thinking of declaring that Bavel was secondary is like a mixture relative to Eretz Yisrael as far as Yuchasim. Again, Reb Pinchas didn't want them to do that. So, but he came up with a different way of preventing them from doing that. First of all, Omer Lahem La'avodah, Reb Pinchas tells his servants, Shani Oyma Shnei Dvorim B'Beis Medrash, when I say the following two things in the Beis Medrash, after that, Tluni Ba'arisa V'Rutsu, take me in my bed, my couch, whatever it was that he was sitting on, and start running. So in other words, this way the Talmidim won't be able to catch up, because the point is, Reb Pinchas was old. He wouldn't be able to get at. Now, what's going to happen? He's going to tell them, he's going to reaffirm to them this point that Eretz Yisrael has less Yichus than Bavel, meaning, in other words, there were more families of Psulim in Eretz Yisrael who are not known. Well, then the Talmidim are going to pressure him to tell them who those families are. He doesn't want to do that. So, because of the danger involved, because those, some of those families are powerful, influential families, and if you start casting aspersions on new yichus, then they may cause trouble. So therefore, Pinchas wants that as soon as he makes the statement, he should right away get out of the Beis Medrash as fast as possible. But he was old; he can't run himself. So he tells his servants that I'm going to give you a signal after I say two things in the Beis Medrash. I want you to pick my litter up and start running, so the Talmidim can't catch up to me. So, Ki Ayo, when Pinchas came into the Beis Medrash, Omar Lahem, the first thing he tells the Talmidim, Ein Shchita La'Oif Min HaTorah. Min HaTorah, a bird doesn't require Shchita. Now, there is, in fact, a machlokas about that in Chulin. Now, Halacha is not like that, but there is such an opinion. Now, why did he start with that? Rashi explains he wanted to tell them something which would be very surprising to them. And that way, they're going to be delving into it and trying to think, why should that be? The reason why is, in fact, in that Gemara in Chulin, the opinion that says this, Rabbi Elazar HaKapper learns it from a pasuk v'shafach hasdomai, where it describes where a person shechts a wild animal or a bird, and he spills out the blood and does kisei adam, the implication being that all you need is a spilling of the blood, you don't necessarily need shchita. Only midrabanan do you need shchita for birds, according to that opinion. The halacha is not like that, but anyway, the point is, he wanted to tell them something very surprising, something completely out of left field, so that way they're busy thinking into it, and that way they won't focus as much on the second thing he says. So he tells them that, Adi Yasi, Vakama Aini Ba, while they're sitting and delving into this and trying to understand where such a din would come from, Omalahu, he tells them the second thing, Kol HaRosis Isol Eretz Yisrael, the Eretz Yisrael Isol HaBavel, to reaffirm that Eretz Yisrael is a mixture relative to Bavel as far as Yosin. Sure enough, his servants followed what he told them. They took him in his litter and started running. Ratzu Achrav, so the Talmidim started trying to run after him to catch up, to ask him, so who are those families in Eretz Yisrael that make it an Issa? Volohi Giyuhu, they couldn't catch up to him. Yoshu Bodku, so the Talmidim themselves started considering through, thinking through the families of Eretz Yisrael, to think who he's talking about, Adshi Gil Sakona, until they reach the point where it would be dangerous, where again, like Rav Pinchas figured, you have families, you have powerful, influential families, where if they announce publicly that these families are psulim, then these families might take reprisals against them, or Pershu, so therefore they held back and they stopped doing it. So that bore out what Rav Pinchas, that he didn't want the Talmidim to pressure him to do that, for the same reason, because of the Sakona. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yochanan, Heichel, Rav Yochanan says, Heichel, which is the meaning, I swear by Hashem's Heichel, meaning by the Beis Mikdash, or by a Heichel in Shemayim, whatever, Biadenu Hu, actually it is in our hands. We have the ability in our time to be able to announce who are the families, who are the families who are apostles. Avol Ma'aser, but what can I do? Sharek Dole Adur Nitmo Ba. After all, people, great people of the generation, meaning it can mean great Talmud Chachamim, it can mean great Balei Tzedakah or whatever, have been mixed into such families, and therefore it's not right to go and reveal it publicly. Meaning, he holds like Rabbi Yitzchak, that we said before, that once a family has been mixed in and we don't know who the psulim are, then we don't reveal them anymore. We just leave it as is. So therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan holds like that. So he's saying that. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying it is true that we know some of these families are possible, but we're going to leave them as being a suffix, and eventually they'll be kosher la'osid loving. Right now, it's not our responsibility to go and clarify the sfeikas and say who, and then figure out. Marsha points out that the implication of what the Gemara means and what Rashi says is that anybody who knows that a particular family has a suffix should taka avoid intermarrying with them, because we said before the Shekhina will rest only on the families that miyuchasim, but you don't have to go and reveal it to everybody else. So Rabbi Yochanan, if he knows that a particular family has a suffix psul in it, then he will avoid making sure, he'll make sure to avoid his daughters or granddaughters or grandsons or whatever marrying into such families. But to go and have to tell it to everybody else, that you don't have to do. So the Gemara says, Omar Abai, Afanan Nami Tanena. So Abai says, in fact, we can see that from a Mishnah at the end of Abias. The Mishnah is described, starts by describing over there what Eliyahu HaNavi is going to accomplish when he comes, and the Mishnah mentions over there one thing he's going to do, according to one opinion, is he's going to, you have people, you have families that were mistakenly thought to be kosher and mistakenly thought to be possible. So the Mishnah says over there, Mishpachas Beisat Tzrifa hoisted be'ever Yaudin. There was a family named Beisat Tzrifa who lived on the other side of the Yaudin. V'richaka ben Sion Bizroya. Ben Sion, who Rashi says was an important and powerful person, distanced them with force. In other words, he announced that they're apostle, even though in fact they were not, and because he was powerful and influential, people listened to him. And then there was another family that was apostle, the Kirva Ben Sion Mizraya. And on the contrary, this Ben Sion brought them close with force, meaning he announced that they're kosher, and nobody better second guessed them. So Kagoyin Elu, sort of Yeshua, says in that Mishnah, these are the kinds of situations Eliyahu Balatamir Lakar Lurachiku Lakar. Those are the kinds of situations that Eliyahu will bring them close or far, and be Mataher and be Mataher and Matame, respectively. In other words, Eliyahu is going to announce which families these are. For example, as far as Mishpachas Beis HaTzrifa, where we're saying that eventually there came a point where people thought that they're apostle when really it's only because of this Ben Sion's influence. So we're saying that Eliyahu is going to announce their kosher. So says Abaya, the implication is, you're going Elu Giyadin. So what do we mean? You have families that everybody thinks they're apostle, but once a family has been blended in and people think they're kosher because they forgot already that they were mamzerim or whatever mixed into it, then they're mixed in and Eliyahu is going to leave them alone. So we see by the implication of that Mishnah what Rabbi Yitzchok is saying and what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. And the Gemara continues, Tana. Now we learn in a Braisa, Oid Acheras Hoysa, there was another family over there in Evra Yaudin. So you have this. The Mishnah mentions two families, and we have to remember families over there, of course, doesn't just mean, you know, two parents and a couple of children. It means like an entire clan and an entire extended family that may go back several hundred years. Anyway, the Mishnah over there mentions, Rabbi Yeshua mentioned, there was this family of Beis HaTzrifa that were really Ksherim, and this Ben Sion announced falsely that they're Psulim. You have the other way around, there was another family, and by the way, the Rambam mentions on the Mishnah, you see how careful the Chachamim are to avoid Lashon Hara, that the Chachamim did not identify that other family by name. They just said another family. The Chachamim, who learned this Mishnah, had the Kabbalah, what the name of that family was, but they didn't announce it publicly in the Mishnah, because why speak badly about fellow Jews when you don't need to? So you had two families like that, one which was kosher and Ben Sion announced that they're posel, the other one which was posel and Ben Sion announced that they're kosher. So now we learn in a Braisa that in addition, there was another family in Evra Yaudin that was also posel, the Chachamim did not want to reveal it because that family had already gotten mixed together with Kshayrim. And again, like we said, Mishpacha Shenitma Nitma. Or another reason could be because like Rabbi Yochanan said before, G'dolei Hador Nitma Ba, by now you have great Tamar Chachamim or Baal Tzedaka or whatever that have been mixed into it. Abo Chachamim Moistrim Oysa Lubneim or Tamadin Pamachas Bashavua. The Chachamim, though, would hand over this information, Baal Peh, to their students and to their Talmidim once every 7 years. So it wasn't the kind of thing that they would tell all the time, but once every few years they would tell it to their Talmidim, so it shouldn't be forgotten. But it wasn't something that other than that they would publicize. Others say that it wasn't once every 7 years; it was twice every 7 years. It's more logical, says Rav Nachum Yitzchok, that the version that says that they would tell their Talmidim only once every 7 years is more correct. Kidatanya, as we learn in a Braisa, if a person says, Hareini Nozir im lo yagala mishpachas, if a person says, if I don't reveal the names of apostle of families and inform the public of them, I will be a Nozir. Now, being a Nazir in and of itself is not such a good thing. We learned a few times in Masech the Nazir and other places that becoming a Nazir, according to one opinion, a person becoming a Nazir is called a Choite, is called a sinner, because he's unnecessarily depriving himself of wine. Here, actually, Marsal says even more. When he says Harini Nazir, he might actually mean the kind of Nazirim that we find in history who would go and who would go and hide out in caves and deserts and whatever and become like monks almost. So you might have a person who says, I know this information, I'm really tempted to say it, but if I don't say it, then the only alternative is I'm going to become a Nazir, I'm going to have to cut myself off from society and go out and live like a monk like that in the desert. Nevertheless, Bryce says, ye a Nazir, well, you got on the Shmachas. Better let him be a Nazir, better even let him become a hermit like that, rather than revealing who the families are that apostle. So the point is, we see, in other words, that this is information that should be told over as little as possible, so therefore that bears out the first version that we said that even the Chachamim would teach it to their Talmidim only once every 7 years rather than even twice every 7 years, because we see how far a person should keep away from such things. Okay, having mentioned something that the Chachamim teach their Talmidim only once every 7 years, so now the Gemara digresses to talk about something else like that, that the Chachamim only teach their Talmidim on a very rare basis. The name of Hashem, four letters, the name Havaya, this also the Chachamim teach it to their Talmidim, meaning teaching them how it's supposed to be pronounced, how it's supposed to be written, the deeper meanings of it. They teach their Talmidim only, again, once every 7 years or twice every 7 years. This is back, you know, in the times of the Gemara. Kabbalah, this is all part of Kabbalah, was meant to be hidden and only taught to a select few. In later times, especially the Arizal says mutter mitzvah galus zos hachachma. So nowadays we don't have that anymore. You know, we learn Chassidus all the time, and we learn about Shem Havaya. We don't learn about the pronunciation of it, but we talk about the deeper meanings about it, about what the various letters represent and so forth. Because that's nowadays. But back then they would only teach their Talmidim these kinds of things once or twice every 7 years. And again, it's more logical to say, according to the opinion, that they teach it to their Talmidim only once every 7 years, because again, we find that this information is supposed to be very closely held, very privileged, secret information, and therefore it shouldn't be told any more than necessary. So if they can tell it to their Talmidim only once in 7 years, then that's how they should be doing it. The pasuk says, "Zesh mi la'olam." Hashem says, "This is my name forever." Me and la'elam k'siv. The pasuk says la'olam. It's written without the vav, so we can read it as though it says la'elam or la'alim, meaning to hide. So Hashem is saying, "This is my name, but it's to be hidden." Similarly, the Gemara says, "Rava sava l'midrashay v'pirka." Rava one time thought to darshan about Hashem's name in the pirka, in the public drasha that he gave to the people. But a certain old Talmud Chacham says to him, Tosfos elsewhere says, that may be Eliyahu HaNavi. Again, the pasuk says, Alim, that it's supposed to be hidden, so don't be going and doubting about it publicly. Again, as we come closer to the times of Mashiach, so therefore we have the ability to doubt in this kind of thing publicly, but not back then. Similarly, the Gemara continues, Rabbi Avinu pointed out a contradiction in the pasuk. The pasuk goes, Hashem says, Zeshmi la'olam, this is my name forever, v'zeh zichri, and this is my remembrance, this is my mention, l'dur v'dur. So now, the question is, l'dur, actually. So the question is, Rashi explains over here, why does it say them as two separate things, shmi and zichri? It should say, Zeshmi v'zichri. So that implies that Hashem taught Moshe, at that point, two names. So what are those two names? Elsewhere, Rashi explains that there's other places, the Gemara in Pesachim, that also brings this, and Rashi over there explains that the question is, the question is something different. Zeshmi la'olam implies that this is the way that we read Hashem's name. On the other hand, Zezichri la'dur implies that there's a certain way we should mention Hashem's name, but not the first one. So what's the difference? Anyway, it means Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Loik Shani Nichtav Ani Nikra. My name is not to be written the way it's pronounced. Ani Nichtav Ani B'Yud Kei V'Nikra Ani B'Aleph Dalim. My name is written Yud Kei Vav Kei, but it's pronounced Adonai, outside the Beis HaMikdash, that is. So therefore, the Zesh Shmila Olam, Hashem is saying, this is my name forever, the name Yudke Vavke. But it's, as we said, as we just said, La'alem, it's meant to be hidden. The Zesh Zichri, the way you actually mention Hashem, L'dor-dor, from generation to generation, is with the shame Adonai. In Hasidus, the Torah Al-Pi Kabbalah talks about the idea that Adonai represents Malchus, where outside the Beis Mikdash, we can only relate to Hashem through his Midah of Malchus, which is the lowest of all the, which is the lowest of all the spheres, whereas in the Beis Mikdash, we can relate to Hashem more intrinsically. The Gemara continues more about other names of Hashem. Tana Rabbanan, Barishayna Shem Ben Shem Esrei Osius. Now, there's a name of Hashem of 12 letters. What is that name? Rashi says, we don't know what that name is. There are various explanations among Rishonim what the 12-letter name of Hashem is. Among them is that, the Ramah brings that it's a combination of three times, Shem Havaya, and then so you have Shem Havaya itself, and then you have three times it, which is considered a different name of Hashem, and that has secrets of its own. And then the Arizal says that it's actually the combination of the three names, Havaya, Adonai, and Ekya. But again, it's not just the combination of the three of them, it's how you blend them together to create like a new name of Hashem, so to speak, which is also a tremendous secret of Torah. So that name, Hoyu Moisrinosa L'Cholodim, again, originally they would give it over to every person, not literally every person. They wouldn't go announcing it on street corners, but in other words, they would teach it to their Talmidim without worrying about whether the Talmud is worthy of it. But eventually you had more unrestrained people. People would use this name without the proper Tara, and they would use it to try to perform Nisim or whatever. So then the Chachamim started handing this name over of 12 letters of Hashem, of Hashem's name, only to the people among the Kohenim who are Tzniyistik, who are Anovim. And they can use it when they're Duchening, when they're Duchening every day. And in the Beis Mikdash, they'll use this name of Hashem in the appropriate places. In turn, these tznuim, they wouldn't say it in a way publicly that everybody could hear. They would sort of blend it in with the singing of the other kohenim. So while the other kohenim are singing between the words of Birkas Kohenim, they would say this 12-letter name of Hashem so people don't hear it. Tanya, and in fact we learn in a brisa, Omer Reb Tarfon, Pamachas Olisi Achar Achi Imi. One time I followed my mother's brother, my uncle, up onto the Duchan, where the Kohenim are Duchening. Reb Tarfon himself was a Duchan. Reb Tarfon himself was a Kohen, but the Mephoshim explained, maybe at this time he was young, so therefore he himself is not of the age to do Birchas Kohenim yet, or maybe he was old enough, but his uncle was particularly prominent, and therefore was standing near the Kohen Gadol, so therefore Reb Tarfon is going to get near the Kohen Gadol only if he goes to his uncle. Anyway, the Tisi Ozni Eitz of Kohen Gadol, Reb Tarfon says, I inclined my ear, I paid close attention to what the Kohen Gadol was saying, v'shamayti shiv li'es shem, and I heard him blending in this 12-letter name of Hashem in the singing of the Kohenim. Meaning Reb Tarfon is saying, I was actually able to overhear him saying this 12-letter name of Hashem. And by the way, Maharsha Shah points out that Reb Tarfon lived not long before the Churban. At that point, we find already that they weren't using this shame. In fact, from Shimon HaTzadik, who's early in the second Beis Hamikdash, they stopped using it. But Maharsha Shah says that means the other Kohenim, the Kohen Gadol, who's on a higher level, continued to use it, and that's Reb Tarfon was able to hear it from him. Now the Gemara says, here's another name of Hashem, Amar of Yehuda Amarab, Shem ben Aboy Mushtayim, the name of Hashem of 42 letters. Now again, Rashi says, I don't know what that name is. And again, there are a few different explanations. One of them, which we know, which is well known, is that it's the initials of the Tefillah Onav Koyach. We have at the end of it, at the end of each line, you have six initials. And since you have seven lines in that Tefillah, then that adds up to 42 letters. Anyway, so that name of Hashem, a Mosunos Elo Mishnuava Onav, you give it over only to a person who's sneistic and humble, so that way he won't misuse it for purposes, for example, to get back at his enemies or whatever. He's in the middle of his years, so he's already at least 35 years old, where therefore, in other words, he's more likely to be mature and calm. Ve'enekoyas, he doesn't get angry. Ve'enemeshtako, he doesn't get drunk. Ve'enemamidamidosav, he's not particular about his midas, where if somebody did something to him, then he bears a grudge or tries to figure out how he's going to get back. So such a person who has all those midas is worthy to be told this 42-letter name of Hashem, because we know he won't use it to take revenge against people or whatever. V'chola yodei, anybody who knows the secret of this name, and is careful with it to use it only in the proper way and not to teach it to anybody else who's not supposed to. Rather, Vazorubai means that he's careful not to teach it to others who are not supposed to hear about it. And he's careful to use it only when he's in a state of Tara. Then he's beloved up above because he's honoring Hashem. He's precious down here on earth, because that way he's not, even though he has this tremendous capability, he's not using it in a way that will harm people. But in Muslim, people will fear him. People will respect and fear him. And he'll inherit the two worlds of Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba in the schus of the fact that he knows to use Hashem's name properly. So Marsha refers to other Gemaras that when a person does use Hashem's 42-letter name for whatever he wants, then the Gemara says such a person aim like chelik l'olam haba. But here we're saying on the contrary that a person who knows how to guard it and use it only in the proper way is zoicha to this world and to the next world. Okay. The Gemara continues. Getting back to this matter of Yuchsin, Omer Shmuel Mishmei Desaba, Shmuel said in the name of an old Tamil Chacham, Bavel Becheskes Kashrus Emedes, Bavel has a Becheskes Kshera Emedes, Bavel has a Chazaka of being kosher, and she Yivodel Chaba Man Nipsala, unless you find out a particular thing that is possible. In other words, by default, when you're marrying, when a Kohen in particular is marrying a woman from Bavel, he doesn't have to check whether the family is kosher, because unless we know otherwise, we know the family is kosher. Shararotzes, other lands, is the other way around. Becheskes Psulhein Omdes, the default assumption is the family is apostle, and she Yivodel Chaba Man Nechshera, unless you know for a fact how they're kosher, meaning that you have to check. We're going to have later on in the perek where a Kohen wants to marry into a family. He has to check several generations back to make sure there are no psulim, so therefore Shmuel is saying that's how it is with any other country except for Babel. Eretz Yisrael, and now in Eretz Yisrael is sort of a medium thing. Muchzak l'posel, a person who has a chazaka being posel, is posel. Muchzak l'kosher, a person who has a chazaka being kosher is kosher. So if you have a family that has a cheskes kashrus, Shmuel is saying you don't need to check into them. Unlike in Chutzlar, it's where you still would, even though they have a cheskes kashrus. And in Bavo, you don't even need to, unless you specifically know they're posel. So the Gemara asks Hogufa Kasha. Now you seem to have a contradiction in what Shmuel is saying about Eretz Yisrael. Amrit Muchzik L'Posel Posel. You're saying in Eretz Yisrael, any family that has a chazaka of being posel is posel. Hastama kosher, implying by default in Eretz Yisrael, everybody is kosher. V'hodatani Muchzik L'Kosher Kosher. Then you're continuing only a family in Eretz Yisrael that has a cheskes kashrus is kosher. Hastama posel, implying that by default they'd be posel. So what is it? What is the din of the default family in Eretz Yisrael where they don't have a cheskes kashrus and they don't have a cheskes psul? So what's the deal with them? Omenav, about chalifa, mishmei didab, loy kasha, there's no contradiction. Kan la'asiya isha, kan la'hoitzi isha miyadei. One is talking about to allow him to marry in the first place. So then, if there's a family where there's no particular chazak on them, he shouldn't marry into that family until he first checks out the yichus thoroughly. On the other hand, if he already married a woman from Eretz Yisrael, lahoitzi isha miyadei, to require him to divorce her, that we're not going to do unless there's an actual cheskes psul in the family. So that's the difference. And the Gemara continues, Amr Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef says, how do we know who's from Bavel? Kol shesi chosei b'Bavel, anybody who speaks like the way they do in Bavel, he uses the dialect of Bavel, he has a Bavli accent. So then Masin Laisha, we're allowed to have him marry a wife who's miuchesis without checking into it. We don't have to be concerned. Again, since he speaks like a person from Bavel, we can assume that he actually comes from Bavel, and therefore that therefore that he's becheskes miyuchas, and we don't check any further. However, the Gemara editorializes nowadays, after Rabbi Yosef's times, where you do have swindlers, you have people who adopt a bodily accent in order that people should think they're from Babel, chayshin, and then we do have to be careful. And if the guy is living in Babel and everybody knows him over there, then that's fine. But if he's traveling from Babel to someplace else, to Eretz Yisrael or whatever, and he speaks like a Babli, we still need to check him out before we're going to allow him to freely intermarry into a family of miyuchas. So the Gemara continues on this topic. Ze'iri habakom mishnamit minei de Rav Yechanan. Ze'iri was trying to avoid Rav Yechanan. To have omale nosif brati. Rav Yechanan wanted to make a shidduch with his daughter to Ze'iri, and now Rav Yechanan was from Eretz Yisrael. Ze'iri came from Babel and moved to Eretz Yisrael. So Ze'iri was trying to avoid it because Rav Yechanan's daughter, being from Eretz Yisrael, is less miyuchas. One time Ze'iri and Rav Yechanan were traveling together on the road. They came to a body of water, a stream or a lake or whatever that they needed to cross. So Ze'iri picked up Rav Yechanan and put him on his shoulders and was carrying him across. Omalei, so Rabbi Yechanan says to him, look at this, I rise and kshera, binsin lo kshera. You're telling me my Torah is kosher, you learned Torah from me, you're my Talmud, and now you're even serving me like the way a Talmud serves his Rebbe, and my daughters are not kosher enough, are not miyuchas enough for you to marry? My daitach, Rabbi Yechanan continues, what makes you think that the people above all have greater yichus? You're going to say because of our Mishnah, which says that Sura Yuchsin Olam Yibavel Kahani Levi Yichula, that we said the 10 groups of Jews came up from Eretz Yisrael, came from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, and among them are the Mamzerim and Nesinim and so forth, and therefore you're going to argue Ze'iri that there were Mamzerim and Nesinim in Eretz Yisrael, but not in Babel. Says Rabbi Yochanan, why? What do you mean? Otu kahani levivi Yisraeli kulu sliku? After all, when we say that kohenim levivim Yisraelim came up from Babel, we don't mean all of them did. Many of them remained behind in Babel. So, ki heichidi ishtayu mehani, ishtayu nami mehani. So the same way as some kohenim levivim and Yisraelim remained in Babel, the same way, maybe also some mamzerim and nesinim and so forth. However, the Gemara says, Ishtemitze hod Amar Rav Elazar. However, Rabbi Yochanan, in saying that, forgot what Rabbi Elazar had said, where we said before, like Ola Ezra in Babel, Adshah saw Kaselus Niki of Ola, that Ezra did not leave Babel until he made it like clean flour, and only then he went up. So, Rabbi Yochanan forgot that statement, or didn't agree with that statement, or whatever. And in fact, there's another explanation. The Maharit gives an explanation. It means not that Rabbi Yochanan forgot. Rabbi Elazar is Rabbi Yochanan's Talmud. He's certainly entitled to argue with him. Rather, Ze'iri, when Rabbi Yochanan says this to Ze'iri, Ze'iri should have said, wait, but Rabbi Elazar said that Ezra took out all the psulim, but Ze'iri forgot to give that answer. He didn't think at the moment of what Rabbi Elazar had said. Anyway, so that was the result, is that Ze'iri, so whether Ze'iri ended up marrying Rabbi Yochanan's daughter, it doesn't say, but that was the discussion between them. Similarly, the Gemara says, Ula ikla la Pumbedisa, la bay Rabbi Yehuda. Ula one time visited Pumbedisa. He was staying in Rabbi Yehuda's house. He saw that Rabbi Yehuda's son, Rabbi Yitzchak, was already old enough to get married, and he hadn't gotten married yet. So Ula asked Rabbi Yehuda, my time will come in Ma'itzulibre. Why are you, Rebbe, not marrying off a son for your daughter? Well, not marrying off your daughter, marrying off your son, marrying a wife off for your son. Omalei, so Rabbi Yehuda says, Mi yadayna mehecha insiv. How would I know where I'm going to find a shidduch? Where am I going to find a family that has unimpeachable yichus that I can have and marry a woman from there? Omalei, so Ula says, look, do we Jews in general know our yichus all the way back without any flaws? What about we might be descended from people, for example, where it says in Eicha, Noshim b'tzian inu b'sulais v'ara Yehuda, at the time of the Churban, the Goyim were raping women in Sia and even married women and b'sulais in the other cities of Yehuda. So how do you know? Maybe we're descended from those Jewish women who were raped by Goyim. Fine, the children are kosher, we said before, but they're pegumim. How do we know we're not descended from them? V'chitema, so you're going to say that's not a problem. After all, the din is that such children are kosher, so you can't say then that there should be an issue with all yichus because of that. But you could argue something else. Dilma mehanech d'chtid behu. What about, though, says Ula, conceivably we might be descended from people of the Aseres HaShvatim, of whom the Pasuk says, as we're going to go through the drasha over here, that they sometimes committed znus. They were sometimes mezana with an eish hasish. So, namely, d'chtid behu, the Pasuk says, the Navi is criticizing people, hashoich b'mamites shein, they lie on ivory couches, because they're very rich. Usruchim alar soisam. Now, literally, the simple meaning of sruchim means they're spread out, they're sprawled out on their couches. But the Gemara wants to find something more. Just because they're sprawled out on ivory couches is not a reason for the Navi to set such a harsh nevuah against them. So, Amar Rabbi Yosi ber Chanina. So, first Rabbi Yosi ber Chanina explains that the word sruchim also means smelly. So, Eilu b'nei adam ha-mashtin ha-mayim b'fnei mitaseim arumim. These refer to people who urinate naked in front of their beds. So, they're in front of their beds doesn't have mean in front of their beds. It just means in an area where they're not careful to keep their bedroom clean. And therefore, so that causes, so now their bedroom is dirty, and that makes the malachim of poverty are more likely to be attracted to their house. And the arumim business is, Rashi and Marsha explain elsewhere, the point is, when a person is already undressed for bed, and he needs to go to the bathroom, he's not going to bother getting redressed and going to the outhouse or the bathroom where he should go. He's just going to do it right there in his bedroom. But it doesn't mean davka when he's naked. It just means that in other words, that he's not careful to keep his bedroom clean. He just urinates wherever. But Megadeth bar Rabbo, but then Rabbo criticized that. Megadeth literally means he cursed at it, although there's an explanation from the Gaonim that the word Megadeth actually means like a wiping motion, like when you wipe a plate. So they say that it means that he made a motion with his hand like that, like a dismissive motion, and said, if that's what it is, all it is that they don't have good habits like that as far as keeping their houses clean. The pasuk continues, therefore these people are going to end up going first into galus. What's the logic? How is that an appropriate punishment? Fine, they're doing something filthy and disgusting of urinating like that in their bedrooms, in front of their beds or in front of their couches or whatever it is, without taking care to keep their houses clean. But is that a reason for them not only to go into Golos, but to be the first ones? Ela Amar Rav Abahu. Rather, Rav Abahu says, the Pasuk is referring, Eva b'nei Adam sha'ucham v'shoisim zeim zeh. These are people who eat and drink together. Umadbikin mitaseim zubazu. Then they put their beds one next to the other. Umachlifin nishaseim zelazeh. And they exchange wives one with another. They're going and being mezane with each other's wives. And with that, they're making filthy and smelly the beds with shichvas zera that's not theirs. In other words, they're having relations with other people's wives and creating mamzerim. So therefore, now we understand the pasuk is saying that such people are going to be the first ones to go into galus. The point being, in other words, Ula says, that was hundreds of years ago. By now, it's very possible that we are descended from such people. And unlike the case where a goy rapes a Jewish woman, where the children at least are considered kosher, here, if we are in fact descended from people who did these kinds of things, then we would be descended from mamzerim. So what are you, Rav Yehuda, so worried about? You want to find somebody of ultra yichus to marry your son, Rav Yitzchak? Look, we never know ourselves. We might actually be descended from mamzerim. So Amalei, so Rabbi Yehuda says, well then how should I do it? How should I check for Yosin? Amalei, so Ula tells him, Zil Bosish Sikusa, follow the ones who are silent. Go look for a family where if you have a family that's argumentative, they're more likely to be puzzled. Because what happens is, because people stay away from them, because people don't want to freely intermarry with them and otherwise socialize with them, therefore they become more... They become more quarrelsome type of people. They're more likely to start arguments and to hold it against people. So when you find a family that's quiet, then it means that they're miyuchasim, because then nobody holds back from associating with them. Ki hai debadki b'nei ma'arov, as in fact that's the way people do it in Eretz Yisrael. Ki minsu t'bei t'rei b'hadi adadi. If two people are arguing, people look at it, now it's Israel, which one goes quiet first? Which one gives up the fight first? And they say, that one must have the greater yichus because he's less of a quarrelsome person. So he may have been drawn into an argument, but he'll get out of it as soon as possible. And in fact, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Shesikusa Debavel, Haini Yechusa. The fact that the Bnei Bavel are quiet and they're not argumentative like that, that is a proof of their Yechus. So the Gemara asks, Eini, is that so? V'ho Iklo Rav Lebei Bar Shofi Chala. Rav one time visited the household of Bar Shafi Chala. Literally, Bar Shafi Chala means the ones who pour off vinegar, but it was the name of a family. The expression over here was in parentheses, and on the side over here it brings a different girsa, Lebei Chala. Whatever it was, he visited this family, and he was checking their yichus, apparently because he wanted to make a shidduch with them. So, my lab b'yachsusa. Doesn't that mean that he was checking out their yichus? So therefore you see that in Bavo you do have to check out the yichus. You can't just rely on the fact that this is a quiet, non-argumentative family. And the answer is Lloyd. No, that's exactly it. He checked out to see, are they quiet, calm kind of people? And that itself, so Rab is telling his shluchim, he didn't go himself necessarily, check out this family, see whether they're the quiet type or not. And if they are, then we know that they're miyuchosim, and I can have my son marry their daughter or vice versa. And in this connection, Gemara says, if you find two people who are constantly provoking and starting arguments one with another, shemetz psul yesh ba'echem mehem. Means one of them has a degree of psul in him. Shemetz means like a trace of psul in him. And therefore, min hashemayim, ve'ein manichin oisa lidavik echad b'chaveir. So Hashem is causing that those families will never join one with another because one is psul and the other one is not, and Hashem doesn't want them to join together. Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says similarly, if you find two families that are always at odds with one another, same thing, Shemetz Psul, Yesh Ba'achas Mehen, means one of them has a degree of Psul in it, and therefore Hashem is preventing that family from intermarrying and getting mixed in with the other one, meaning, in other words, so now what's the difference? Rav Shah says, Rav is talking about individuals. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, not necessarily individuals. Look, you can have, after all, one individual kind of harm the other one, and therefore the other one takes offense and keeps on bringing it up again and again. When you have two families, though, where two families are constantly involved in this quarrel, then it must be something more min hashamayim to prevent them from intermarrying. But according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, if it's two individuals, then that doesn't necessarily show anything. So now the Gemara will continue in the Gemara tomorrow discussing, now that we said that Bavel is the place of Yuchsin, now we're going to talk about the details of various places in and around Bavel and the Jewish communities that were in those places and discuss which ones have Yuchus and which ones do not.
Yes, the Kayach.
Yeah, have fun.